Recording and share screen. Okay, so we're gonna do this Gemara here on Pei Vav. This Gemara appears in a few places in Shas, so here. Okay, so the Gemara says as follows: Tzav et bnei Yisrael vikhu elecha shemen zayit zach. So, in the context of the menorah, so I hope by the time we get to this parsha, honestly, we're back in shul and we can lane. If not, this is in a few parsha down the line. So, take pure oil. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmini, Eilecha. The key here is it's for you. Veloli, and not me. It's not for me. God says, look, I want you to have the menorah for your sake. Lo leora ani tzarich. Because I don't need its light. So then, if you go down a little bit later, the Gemara says, Shulchan, well, actually, next line, Shulchan b'tzafon menorah b'darom. The Shulchan was in the north, and the menorah was in the south. And Amar Rabbi Zreika, Amar Rabbi Lazar, and Rabbi Zreika said to Rabbi Lazar, Lo l'achilani tzarech, v'lo l'orani tzarech, I need neither food nor light. Vayas. Labayit chaloneish kufim atumim. To further prove its point, the Gemara says that the windows of the Beit HaMikdash were shkufim atumim, were narrow and broad. So Chazal understand that's Tana, shkufim mibifnim, vatumim mibachutz. Lo leora ani tzarich. They widened towards the inside, so that light from the outside would be dispersed through the room to prove that God didn't need the light. Now, do you know what windows used to look like? Have you guys gone up? Like, if you go by the windows, no, amol, not stained glass. I'm talking about in 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago. If you've probably seen these in the walls in Yerushalayim, if you didn't know what these are, here, let me see if I can get this. Windows, walls of Jerusalem. Let's see if I get what I need. No, that's not helping at all. No, not these, not these. No. Okay, I mean, it's basically, gosh. It's like a hole in the wall that goes like, it's like a jut, it go, juts out and goes like this. Okay? Exactly, it's just like a hole, but it directs light. And what the Gemara is saying is that this directed light out, rather than in. Right? Normally you'd want the light coming in, but this directed it out because God doesn't need light, so he doesn't need to bring light in, he wants light out. So then the Gemara continues, Michutz la'parochet Hashem tells Aaron to light the menorah outside of the paroche, and the Gemara says that this indicates that this is edut, that the Shechina is amongst the Jews. Ve'im tamar orani tzarich. And now the Gemara says, and how do I know that the menorah and the shulchan, right, that it's not for God's light and God's food, because God doesn't need light, God doesn't need food. What's its proof? V'halo kol arbaim shana shehalchu Yisrael ba'midbar lo halchu ela le'aro. Because for the 40 years in the desert, the Jews went by his light, his with a capital H. Ela, so then why do you have a menorah? Edutu l'chol ba'olam shashchina shoreh b'Yisrael. It is testimony to the world that God's Shechina dwells amongst the Jewish people. So here we have several Agadic statements. Right, we have the statement that God doesn't need light. So the first statement is a diuk in the pasuk. V'ikhu elecha. You should take the menorah for you. So that's level one. For you, meaning not for me. Okay, so the first proof that the purpose of the menorah is not for God is exegetical. Right? I want you to take the menorah for you, not for me. And the Gemara says, then the Gemara gives a second statement, Shulchan and menorah are not for God's eating and not for God's light. Now here, what's the Gemara's proof? So the Gemara here doesn't prove it exegetically, as the Koran that you see in front of you indicates. The simple pshat of this Gemara is, the proof is logical. So what's the logic? So remember, why do you have candles on Shabbat? To see while you're eating. Which means that if God needed light and God ate, so his table and his candelabra, his lamp, would be next to each other. So what did he do? He put the shulchan on one side and he put the menorah on the other side, which made it completely non-functional. To prove that God is not eating and God doesn't need light. Meaning the second proof for the Gemara, the first is exegetical, the second is logical or even architectural, right? The fact that God told you to set up the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash in such a way to make the menorah non-functional in relation to the Shulchan, if kivyachol God would eat, he would need light. But since he put his light far away from his table, that tells you that the food isn't for food and the light isn't for his light. These are both parts of the Beit HaMikdash, therefore the Jews. So proof two to this notion that the Beit HaMikdash and its accoutrements are for God and not for the Jewish people is architectural. Then the 2b in the Gemara is a second proof from the architecture of Shlomo's Beit HaMikdash, which is the fact that the windows in the Beit HaMikdash were completely non-functional. Do you guys remember, we talked about this when Rabbi Dr. Meir Soloveitchik gave shir a few months ago. When he gave shir, right, he said that at this level, right, this is like the essence of the. He quoted from his great uncle, from the Rav, that this is the essence of Ner Chanukah, that it's not a Ner Lamaor, it's not a Ner that makes light. Because you don't need light. You can't get an out from it. That's the whole point. You need to prove that it's not light. Right? It's not for light. It's for symbolic light. But it's not. It's for Pirsume Nisa. Whatever. But it's not for providing God with light. And to be fair, not providing us with light in the case of the menorah. And our menorah, not the menorah. The Chanukiah, as we would call it. Right, that's why I'm trying to get a picture for you to
beneficial, maybe quote unquote beneficial to God if the light's going into the structure.
No, the light goes out of the structure.
So less light goes inside.
Correct. Right. So if you ever go up to the walls of Yerushalayim, you'll see that there are. I'm going to try one more time to find this. 2004. See if I can find it. Yeah, maybe. Maybe I can get it. Let's see, will this do it? Okay, that's not a great picture. Okay, maybe just do slits in the ramparts of Jerusalem. Okay, this is not a terrible picture, but sort of, you see how, this is just a bigger version of it. You see how there's these slits, and they narrow at the front, and then they widen at the back? Right, you see, like, this is, on the inside of the wall, it's pretty big, but the other side is very, very thin. Right, so it's the same idea essentially. This is a bigger version because it's the for archers, where basically what it would be is, right, you want to be able to see out more than they can see in. Right, now that's only because of shooting, but in terms of light, it's the opposite. If you put a candle, or if you have something like this, right? So the light will come in and then spread when it comes, right, out, rather than coming to a pinpoint, right? But if your window goes like this, right, then there's a lot of light. It's just, basically, you'll get just like a slit on the wall, right? No?
Yeah.
Right, so if their walls are like a V, right? The window is like a V, right? It's like a V built into the wall, that juts out like this. So if the light is coming from the wide part of the V, then when it comes in, it focuses, right? It's like when you take a magnifying glass and you take the sun and you pinpoint it into a little spot. So it's very, very hot at that spot, but the light is focused, right? But it's not going to light up a room, right? It'll like burn a little hole, right? So that's what it does when the V is facing, when this narrow part of the V is on the inside and the wide part is on the outside. It'll take a lot of light, but it'll basically make one bright beam into the house. That doesn't light up your house, right? So
the windows were specifically built just to show this idea.
So, right, so in a normal house, it would go the other way, right? And you'd have slits. You don't want everybody to be able to see into your house. So you don't want a window like what we have, right? But what you'd have is you'd have a backwards V. So a little bit of light would come in and then spread out. In the Beit HaMikdash, it's the other way. So the light of the Beit HaMikdash would go out towards the world. So the second proof of the Gemara is two, what? A 100%, right? 100%. And that is what gets to, I think, number three, right? So proof one is exegetical. Elecha, take it for you. Proof two, A and B, are based on architecture. One is the fact that the Shulchan was made non-functional. The menorah was made non-functional if you imagine God eating. So you'd want his table next to his lamp. So we dafka split them. Proof 2b is that the menorah, the light was focused out rather than in. Now, proof 3, and this is what Joel said, is, right, now you see, this isn't just three proofs. It seems to be ascending, right? Meaning, proof 1, which is exegetical, is simply, it's for you, not for me. It's not that it couldn't be for me. It's just that it's not for me, right? Logically, proof 2a and b is it's actively not for me to show that I don't need it, right? It's not for you because I love you, but I could have used it. No, it's for you and not me, so I make it non-functional for myself. Now, what is stage three? It's what Joel says, right? If you think logically, what should stage three be? Then what does it mean it's for you? It's about representing the relationship that God has with the Jewish people that's manifest in the Beit HaMikdash, and that's stage three of the Gemara, right? Which is the next line. Michutz la parochet ha'edut ve'ol moed edut hu l'chol bayi olam sheshchina sh'rei b'Yisrael. And that's why, where did you put the Aron? Outside of the parochet, to as testimony to the fact that God is among the Jewish people. And then proof three is v'im tomar, and maybe you think la'orani tzerich, maybe you don't buy all this, you say it's for me. No, I'll prove to you that this is only for you. Why? V'halo kol arbaim shana shalchu Yisrael b'midbar lo'chu el le'oro. Because the 40 years in the Midbar, the Jews went by God's light, which means God provides light for us. He doesn't need us to give him light. Haraya ela edudu l'chol b'ay olam sheshchina sh'rei b'Yisrael. So stage three is proof that I don't need it, which is I give you light, you don't give me light. And in stage three, and 3b of the Gemara, it says, and now let me explain therefore what is the purpose. If it's not for light, it's for edut. It's to prove that I am amongst the Jewish people. Right? So that seems to be the structure of this Agadata. Right? An exegetical proof that it's for the Jews, two logical proofs that it's worthless to God, and then a third proof, which is I give you light, you don't give me light, and an explanation, then why do you have this at all, which is to represent the relationship that that the Jews have with God. But now we need to push this. Yeah?
Why couldn't you just have the last three of the Torah?
Well, you could, but I think it builds. So, right, meaning theoretically you could, but first of all, you could. But remember, these are each functioning differently. Right, the first point to notice about how this Agadata works is that it provides three different types of proofs, right? One is exegetical, and if we ever have a drush and a pasuk, we're always going to start with that. The second, which is architectural, is important because, and maybe it adds a few things. First of all, it adds the fact that this isn't just about the menorah, it's also about the shulchan, meaning it's a statement about the mishkan in general. That's 2a. And what does 2b add? That's very important.
Relationship between food and light?
Well, let's call that 2a. What's 2b? About the windows.
Oh, the windows.
Well, I would say at the very, very basic pshat level, it adds the Beit HaMikdash. Right? First, we're talking about the Mishkan. Right now he adds, by the way, this continues to be true in the Beit HaMikdash. Right? Because you could have thought that maybe that's true in the temporary one, the Mishkan, but the Beit HaMikdash is God's home. Right? Kamashmola, no. These architectural cues continue in the Beit HaMikdash. And to be fair, if you look at the rest of Shlomo's Tefillah, it's all about how God doesn't really fit in a house. So Chazal is just picking up on the theme of those psukim. And then stage three builds on this, because for obviously 3b tells you why this is true, right? That's important. And it tells you that this relationship was manifest over a long period of time, which is also very important. Okay. So we'll see how much we do in this Agadah. I think already just realizing the structure is important here to understand what the Agadah is trying to accomplish. But let's try to push it even farther, okay? So, you can see my Bar Ilan now?
Yes.
Okay. So. Let us go down now to Tosafot. So, here we go. The Tosafot says, Lo l'achila ani tzarich, v'lo l'ora ani tzarich. I don't need food, I don't need light. So, yesh mefarshim, midinoten sholchan b'tzafon, u'menora b'darom, v'lo l'mitzad ma'arav shesham shchina. So he said, first of all, there are some people who say that the real architectural proof here is not that the Mishkan, sorry, that the menorah is separate from the Shulchan, but rather that neither the Shulchan nor the menorah are in the west. And the Ma'arav is the side that is identified with God's presence. But Tosafot doesn't like that. He says, Vileta, Dilav lafuka mitzad ma'arav kati. This is not coming to tell you it's not about the west. V'chimim shechinami letzad ma'arav, efshar shinyatayin zeh letzad zafon, zeh letzad zarom. And even if it were to, right, stretch into the west, this at the north, this is the south, michatzi abayi lefnim ayu munachim, b'damar lekaman, v'vrek shtei alechem, right, meaning it could go into the west side, etc., and he quotes a whole machloket about this. So that's just the first very technical point. And then he notes from Rashi, "Beir Gunja's Iker to dive with the Shulchan Mitzvah and Arbet Darom and Mizayach Ayeb Emtza Shma Mina Lolora Ani Tzarech Lolachila Demayiti Tzarech Hayidina Minar Samakul Shulchan Kanoach Shiba Olam." Right. The simple pshat is, as Rashi said, that it's about the separation of the Shulchan and the Menorah. Next Tosa, Michutz LaParochad Aedud Yarov. So Beperek Mabe Madlik and Garcinan. V'chi le'orahu tzarich v'alo kol otan arvim shana shalchu Yisrael b'midbar lochu elo le'oro. Okay. So what is this, right? So let's be very careful. What's the girsa that he has? Do you need le'ora? Right, of a menorah. How do I know you don't need it? Because the Jews went le'oro. Who's oro? So it's not clear, right? Or, right, so it's there's two possibilities. What are they? What's the proof? Oro is either or shel Hashem or shel hamenorah. Right? But that would be weird because then it should be lo holchu ela le'ora. So what exactly is going on here? And they also didn't walk by the light of the menorah. So what's going on? So Mefarish Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam reads the Gemara as follows: De Aharon koi. The subject here is Aharon. V'chil orahu tzarich Aharon v'alo kol otan arba'im shana shalchu Yisrael b'midbar. Lo halchu elo oro shel amud ha'esh. K'deita b'brayta. D'melechen ha'mishkan mistaka b'tafiyach v'roa b'b'chavit ro ma'ashe b'docha u'v'torat karen. So he said, what does it mean? It can't be that you needed that the Aron is for, the menorah is for light, because in the Mishkan, the light of the Amud HaEsh, which is clearly the implication there, shone into the Mishkan, and therefore Aron in the Mishkan, even though he would have been the one who would have gotten light from the menorah, he was getting light from the Amud HaEsh. Okay? That's his very particular read. Then he notes that there's the Torah Kohanim doesn't seem to say that it's about Aharon. Right? That's the next stage. Right? I think that's a very, Rabbeinu Tam is a very hard read. So let's see the second read. U'v'Torah Kohanim, v'parshat emor el Kohanim, garsinan, v'chitzrichen l'ner, V'alo kol tam rabim shana shalchu Yisrael b'medbar lohot shuchul aner shne mar ki anan Hashem al mishkan. So he says, in the Torah Kohanim, it sounds like the subject isn't Aharon, but the subject is who? The Jewish people. Which makes a lot of sense, because remember, what is the Gemara trying to prove here? That the light is not for God, it's for the Jewish people. In what sense? So the Gemara says, look, in the Midbar, we had a physical instantiation of God's presence among us that actually gave us light. Therefore, any light is just a commemoration of that or something like that is similarly manifesting, but it can't be that we light a light for God because he had the fire there that provided light and simultaneously represented the fact that God was among us. So possibility two that Tosfot raises is that the light is the Amud HaEsh. Well, there are two questions here that Tosfot is dealing with. One is who for 40 years used the light, and question two is what light? So in the first two answers, he thinks that the light that we're talking about is the fire of the Amud HaEsh, the pillar of fire that followed the Jews. In answer A, or answer one, he thinks that it's the Amud HaEsh for Aaron. Answer two seems to be that the proof is that there's the Amud HaEsh for the Jewish people. Three is Umi Yusugya Deshmaitzin Mashmat the Ashchina Koi. Vekasha, the Havel Elamir, called Olam Kulo Le'orosh Makom Hayu Holchim. Answer three is that Oro doesn't sound like the menorah. It sounds like it's God. And it can't be the Amud HaEsh because that's something that didn't appear in the Gemara. And therefore, Tosfos' third answer is that the way the Gemara should be read is since we went by the light of God, that should prove that we don't need, that God doesn't need light, because he was the light. Not that he provided light, but that he is the light. But then Tosfot has a question on the third answer, which is, okay, look, I get answer one. Answer one's a little bit weird, but I get it, which is Aaron, who is the person who would most benefit from the menorah, he didn't need light in the Mishkan because of the Amud HaEsh, haraya, that the menorah is there for a different purpose, for a testimony and not for light. Answer two is, God doesn't need light. Proof, he provided you with light. Now, it's a different light. It's not the menorah. It's the Amud HaEsh. But the proof is that God clearly doesn't need light because he provides you with light. Answer three is a spiritualized answer, which is God doesn't need light because we follow the Shekhinah. And this bothers Tosfot because he said, well, doesn't the whole world follow the Shekhinah? I mean, if you're talking about like God, his spirit, or the fact that he provides illumination to the universe, I don't know, whatever that is, whatever you think it means that the Shekhinah illuminates the world, right? Whether you think that means partially spiritually, whether you think that means the fact that God provides the sun, the moon, and the stars, provides light to the world, whatever. Once you get all meta on me and talk about the Shekhinah, he said that I don't know what's going on, because the implication of the Agadata for Tosfot is that there were 40 years in which you followed the light of God, which proves that even though now you're not following the light of God, you should know that God doesn't need light, right? That's the simple shot of the Agadata according to Tosfot. And therefore Tosfot says, The simple pshat is the light is the Shekhinah. But the fact that God provides illumination, that doesn't change. That's still true. So why does the Agadita seem to suggest that the proof that God doesn't need light is only from a very particular period in history? That doesn't seem to make sense.
So you're saying because God is, because of, like, he sort of has it already?
Say that again?
I'm trying to understand the third answer. So because God...
Right, because the Shekhinah provides light, that proves, or is light, or God provides illumination generally. So that proves that God doesn't need light, because he always provides illumination. The problem that he says that... unclear. Does it mean the... It sounds like it has to be light. So it maybe he means, you know, that the Shekhinah, that God just provides light. I don't know. Tozer's problem is that once you get into this meta, that God provides light, the implication of the Gemara is that we're supposed to learn that God doesn't need the light, the Jewish people need the light, from the fact that the Jews in the Midbar followed something only in the Midbar that we don't have now. But if you're talking meta, so...
How can that prove it if that was a one-time instance?
It just doesn't fit in the Agadita. The Agadita says that you should know that God doesn't need light because the Jews in the Midbar followed his light. Tosafot said, so why don't you just say, God doesn't need light because the whole world gets illumination from the sun, which God created. Meaning, once you're getting into this meta-philosophical realm, like...
You don't need that example. You could use any example.
Yeah, he's saying, what is going on? But the Rashba, or the Miyuchos L'Rashba, really, comes up with what I think is pshat. Because I think here, Tosfot is confusing. Like, Tosfot, all three answers that Tosfot provides confuse me. Because what the Rashba seems to say is, I think, pshat in the overarching theme of the Agadita. Because, you know, this Tosfot is one of those Tosfot them where I at least feel like I got lost in the, you know, I got lost in the trees and I missed the forest. Right, if you ask me at a broad level, what is the pshat in the Agadita? What is the Agadita getting at? Right, I would say the Agadita has two main messages. God needs nothing and provides all. And therefore, anything that seems like it's for God's sake is not. It's there for something else. And specifically in the Beit HaMikdash, it's there to prove that God has a relationship with the Jewish people, because it's not practical, so it must be theological. Right? That's like the broad picture that the Gemara simply proves from a drasha, from the architecture, and from the Midbar. Now, if I asked you, is that supposed to be a lesson for life? A lesson for all times? What would you say? A lesson just about the Midbar? Like, what is this supposed to be a lesson for?
It sounds like a meta lesson.
Yeah, it sounds like a meta lesson. So what does he say? So the Rashba says, Mikan nira liyashe kushe shikshu atosfot beperek mamad likin. The ka'amar v'chil oro tzarech v'lo kol memshan l'of v'lo ro. U'may makshi my ka'amar memshan agam ata inen ohoch my l'o ro. And he said, Tosfot gets all bothered. What does it mean? You walk by God. If it's about God, then it's true at all times, in all places, for all people. Why are you limiting it to the Midbar? And the Rashba says, V'halo kasha. Well, what are you talking about? D'la'or kavod shechina ka'amar. Sheba amurana. V'amura eshira b'midbar. L'kach ka'amar l'oro. Ratzalomar l'or atzmo. He said, first of all, it is clear, he says, that the pshat is like Tosfot said in answer two. That it's about the Amur HaEsh. It's about the Amur HaEsh. So he says, Wait a second. What was Toastvote's problem? Toastvote was forced to say that Oro meant the light of God. Why? By implication, why? Because the Gemara didn't mention the Amud HaEish. Right? So the only subject that Oro could apply to is God himself. And that's what Tosafot got all, you know, got all confused about. The Rashba says, what are you talking about? Here's the pshat. It's very simple. What's the meta purpose of this Haggadah? To prove that God doesn't need light. And how does it prove it? Because he provides light, which means that you don't need to provide light for him. Therefore, here's the pshat. It's true. Le'oro means not the light of the Amud HaEish. What does it mean? The light of God. Except not in some spiritualized sense or generic sense. This is what it means. In the Midbar, we went by the light that God provided for us. What was the light that God provided for us? The Anan and the Amud HaEish. Meaning, the subject is God. Right? Don't miss the point. The point is that God doesn't need light because he always provides us with light, which means we don't need to provide it for him. So, say it again.
How is the Anan considered light?
It's really the Amud HaEish, right? To whatever extent the Anan provided light. But the point is the HaEish, right? Meaning, for 40 years we followed God's candle. That's what it's saying, right? The subject is God. The point isn't that we followed the fire. The point is that we followed God and God provided us with light. That's the point. Proof, Dehubatva Meirlehem. Ve'ena Peiro Shelo Oro L'Or Shelo. We don't mean him, the light that is God. The Yirtzalom L'Or Shebara K'mo HaShemesh V'Kol Chavim. We don't mean the sun and the moon. We mean the light that God provided. Ela Mo'or Atzmo K'amar Dehu Ria Yeteira Dehu Tzarech L'Oro. And he says, you know what? It's two different pshatim. It's two different pshatim. Don't worry about it. Right? In one place it says la'ora. In one place it says la'oro. They're both coming to the same point. That the key here is the light that God provided for us. But now, let's push this yet farther. So now if I ask you, okay, so fine, but Tosafot's bigger question, or the question the Rashba just sort of skirts around, which is, but why don't we just prove from the world, right? Meaning, if the point is that God doesn't need light, why don't you just say, look, God created the sun, the moon, and the stars. He provides illumination to the world on a continuing basis. Why is it that the Gemara's proof, historical proof, is only from the Midbar? So what would you say? What?
Midbar is Jewish specific.
So one could be that the point is, right, what Yosef says, is that remember, what's the point in the Gemara? That the light in the menorah is for the Jews. Namely, the light in the menorah represents God's relationship with the Jewish people. So God, it couldn't just say, look, right, the Gemara isn't just trying to prove that God doesn't need light. It's trying to prove that God doesn't need light, and therefore, if there is light there, it's to do something for the Jewish people. You can't just take a generic proof about humanity. You need to find an instance in which there was light provided by God specifically for the Jewish people. So that's one possibility. The Karban Aharon says, well, first of all, that's the only light that was consistent, right? The proof there is maybe it's just very technical, that God, first of all, was a miracle, right? So it's in your face. Second of all, it was day and night. There was always a source of light. The proof of the Gemara is that, look, for 40 years, even at night when it's normally dark and you need a lamp, we didn't need a lamp. Right? Meaning the moon and the stars don't help us that much at night. It's still pretty dark. The point was that even at night, when it would be normally dark and we would need illumination, God provided the illumination, which proves that he never needs light. The Sfat Emet says, well, maybe what was unique about that light is that it was everywhere at all times, right? It illuminated the whole camp, so it's a better proof. But if you want it, but I think that the pshat here is simpler, right? That I think the pshat here is simpler, and I saw this in several of the Achronim. Give me a pshat that will really tie together the meta lessons of the Agadata, and will explain what's going on here, but will also teach us something about the Jews in the Mishkan. You're all freezing on me.
Where does 63 go?
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe they clicked leaf by accident. Black hole.
Maybe. So if you asked me,
what's the problem we're trying to solve right now? Just so I can think about it.
Why is it, right, in the end of the day, right, the question that everyone's really bothered by now, Tosfos and the Rashba, is why is it that we don't just say, look, God doesn't need light, proof, there are sun, moon, and stars, and God provides light at all times. Why is it that we're picking on this 40 years? So you could say it's because it's about the Jewish people. You could say that that was a light that specifically was Eidot, that God was present amongst the Jewish people, right? You could come up with a whole bunch of things, but I saw one Achron that said what I think is the simplest pshat and ties the Agadata together. And that is, I'll say it this way. Many of the Mefarshim know this in different places. Why is it that God gave us man in the Midbar? What was God trying to do with the man?
Show that he's the ultimate giver?
Yeah, exactly. So that when we would get to Eretz Yisrael, right, what does Dvarim tell you? When you get to Eretz Yisrael and now you're going to be working hard yourself, what are you going to think?
That it's not just me doing work. Like it's.
You're going to think it's just you. Meaning, until now.
Looking back on the man.
Exactly. Looking back on the man, you'll remember that it looks like it's you, but it's not really you. It's really God. Proof, remember that God provided you with food for 40 years, magically, miraculously, that proves that God is really behind food. And therefore, even when it looks like it's you, you'll remember that it's really God.
But at the same time, you can't just sit and wait for God to give you food.
No, for sure not. But that's the complexity. Right, the complexity is to work for the food and remember that God is behind it. How do you educate a nation to really feel that God is behind it? Have an experience of miracle for 40 years where they viscerally know that everything they have comes from God. And then forever they'll know that even when they get it, b'derech hateva, it's really from God. So I think the pshat in the Gemara is as follows. The same is true of light. Meaning, at a deep level, is the real proof in this Gemara that obviously God doesn't need the light because he provides the sun, the moon, and the stars illumination? Of course that's the pshat. But what was the mechanism by which God proved that? You can't prove it through Teva, because if someone doesn't believe in God, then he'll just look at Teva, look at nature, and say, that's not God, that's nature. How did God teach the Jewish people that even natural light is from God? For 40 years, he led us by miraculous light. And the miraculous light educates us towards the fundamental reality of the universe, which is that everything, regular light, is also from God.
So you have the Amura, right? You have the Amura in the desert, and then that sort of goes back to the sun. You can't go the other direction.
Correct. Is that, what do you do, right? This is how I would read the Agarata, right? The Agarata goes like this. Stage one. The menorah is for you, exegetically. Look, it's for you, not for me. Two. Obviously, it's not for me, because I don't need anything. Look at the architecture of the Mishkan. This is my home. If it's my home in the way of a pagan god, so put my light by my table. Make the windows illuminate for me. But I don't need a home. I don't really live in the Beit HaMikdash. I have a place where I represent my relationship with the Jewish people. So put my table on one side, put the light on the other side, make the light go out rather than in. Stage three. Stage three, the Gemara says, is you want proof. You want proof that God doesn't need light, that you're the one who needs light, and that the purpose of the Mishkan is to show you that God is present among you. Well, remember there was that 40-year period where God guided you by miraculous light? So maybe he's not doing that now. But through that miracle, he proved that he doesn't need anything. He doesn't need light because he's the provider of light. And therefore, even when you no longer have the Amud Esh, all you have are candles and sun and moon and stars. And now you're going to be tempted to think, oh no, when we light a candle into the Beit HaMikdash, it's for God. God says, no, 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 no. Remember that miracle I did for 40 years to teach you the ultimate essence of reality, which is that I don't need anything. I give to you. You don't give to me. Let that miracle remind you of this fundamental truth of nature, which is that I give to you. You don't give to me. It's not that the lesson is the sum total of the lesson is the fire in the Midbar. That's just the means that we use to prove that God doesn't need light, that God is the provider, not the one that is provided for. So I think the Rajba is right, locally, that what is the pshat here? The pshat is, for 40 years, God led you by his candle. But Tosfot's intuition that there should be a broader lesson being taught here about the relationship of the Shekhinah, etc. I think that's also right. It's just that the 40 years in the Midbar were the lesson to provide the meta lesson that's unspoken here, but is obviously supposed to emerge, meaning even in a world where God is not doing that anymore, you're supposed to carry that lesson with you. So now we come back to it, and I think what Yosef said is also correct. Right, so then what is the purpose of the menorah? Right, if we're supposed to carry the lesson with us that God doesn't need light because God provides is not provided for, so then what is the purpose of the menorah? So lesson two, I think,
it's a constant reminder to us, right?
It's a constant reminder to us, and specifically, as Yosef notes, the 40-year period that we're talking about, it's clear that what was the purpose of the light, not just to provide light, but to provide light to the Jewish people, to show that God was present among them. So lesson one is God doesn't need light. But then why is there light? Right? I mean, there are two lessons that have to be taught. One is that God doesn't need light. That's one lesson. The second lesson is the why do we have light? The Gemara answers to attest to the fact that God is present among the Jewish people specifically. That's the other lesson that you can derive from the 40 years in the Midbar that you couldn't get from the sun, moon, and the stars. Right? Getting the lesson that God provides light, you couldn't get the sun, moon, and stars for a practical reason, which that most people need a miracle to teach them about the miracle of nature and can't just look straight at nature. But the second lesson that we wanted to derive from the 40 years in the Midbar is that the purpose of that light is to show that God has a relationship with the Jewish people. That was clearly the purpose of the light of the fire in the Midbar. So it's the purpose of the fire in the Midbar, and that's when the Mishkan started. So that lesson is supposed to carry over and teach us that now the reason we put that light in the Mishkan or in the Beit HaMikdash is as a statement that God is present amongst the Jewish people. And that seems to be, I think, the other lesson that emerges from the menorah. But again, there are really two things going on, right? One is the lesson that emerges from proving to us that God doesn't need light. The second is, once you say that God doesn't need light, and yet there needs to be a menorah, you need to come up with a different lesson. Meaning, what is the menorah teaching us if it's not for light? Answer to that is, it attests to the fact that God has a relationship with the Jewish people. And in that sense, Yosef is right. The best proof for that comes from the Midbar. Now, you know, the Kabbalists have all types of comments on this Gemara, right, that the menorah maybe represents God's presence in this world, etc. Now, I would just say, right, that the you know, some of the Achronim talk about this. You know, the famous Beit Yosef's question, why is Hanukkah 8 days if the miracle was 7 days, right? Meaning it was supposed to last for one day. So one of the famous answers in the Achronim, not necessarily the answer I like the best, but one of the answers in the Achronim is because it's 7 days for the miracle of the menorah, right? That it lasts for 7 days, and one day for the fact that oil even ignites to begin with, while it may be natural, is no less miraculous just because we're used to it, right? So it's one day to celebrate the nature, the miracle of nature, and 7 days to celebrate the miracle, the specific miracle, that it lasted an extra 7 days. But I think that idea sort of dovetails with what I'm suggesting is shot here in the Agadata, which is the Gemara is bringing a proof from a miracle, but dafka to show us that what was evident and manifest in an intense way in the miracle of the 40 years, that God provides and is not provided for, and two, that God has a relationship with the Jewish people, is meant to prove that even when we're just talking about nature, when there aren't open miracles like that, the lesson is still true, right? That God is still behind it, just like we said by the man. And two, it's to remind us that God still has a relationship with the Jewish people, just as it was manifest in the time of the Midbar through the Amud HaEish, it's manifest in the Beit HaMikdash through the light of the menorah. So that's, I think, my thoughts on this Agadata. We're not. Let me just finish this one second. Let me put a stop on this.